Welcome to the Business Blueprint Information Session. We're going to be hearing from David Vallier, who's the president and founder of InfoProductLab.com, and I'm going to be your host, Terry Telford from TheBusinessProfessional.com. It's going to be a very interesting discussion because in 1999, David was $60,000 in debt. Today, in 2004, he's financially independent. And we're going to take a look at how David turned his life and his business around and give you a plan that you can actually follow in David's footsteps and build an empire the same as that David's done. So I'd just like to start off by saying thanks very much for being with us here today, David.
Oh, you're welcome, Terry. It's my pleasure.
Oh, thank you. Can you give us your background? Where did you come from? A little story, if you will.
Well, I was born in Utica, New York in 1957. So if you add up the years, you can tell how old I am. And I lived here for most of my life. I did leave Utica to live in Boston for about 40 years in the late 80s and early 90s. And then when our children, my wife and I have been married 20 years, and when our children were getting to the age where they were attending school, we felt Utica was probably the best place and best environment for them to be raised. And we moved back to Utica in about 1992 or 93. And I've been in Utica. Primarily my background was working in the nonprofit sector as a job developer, then as a counselor for people who lost their jobs, and then I got into working with nonprofit housing agencies, building housing for low and first-time home buyers. This is new housing and renovation of existing housing. And I became the CEO of two nonprofit corporations that built low-income housing in our area, specifically for low-income first-time home buyers, which is a big initiative that President Bush is into now. And then I worked for the city of Utica, where I lived as the Director of Economic Development and as the Deputy Commissioner of Urban and Economic Development for my community. And in 1999, I decided to quit all of that and become a full-time internet entrepreneur.
Wow, cold turkey.
Yes, just about. And I started online in 1996, and it was I had always had a passion for books, and I was a collector and dealer since 1979, but primarily as a hobby and something that I did in my spare time when I wasn't working. And, it had built up, and it was a fairly decent part-time sideline activity, and I ended up writing a book about it and a course on how other people could do it, and that was my first information product back in 1996, and I actually put up a web page selling the course, which was a manual of about 250 pages and a couple of audio tapes, and I sold that for $197. And it shocked me that anyone would actually buy it, but they did. It was just, it was really kind of a rush in the very early days, just putting up a website and selling a product for $197. And, of course, you know, back in 1996, they didn't have the automated systems that they do now. And so people, in order to order the product, it was a physical product, it wasn't a digital product, and in order for them to order it, they had to call me on the phone and order it, and they gave me their credit card numbers, and I'd run it through my merchant account that was on my computer at the time, and like a mail order product, and then I'd pack the manual and the tapes up and ship it off to them. But that's how I got started.
Wow. So back then it was almost like they really had to jump through a lot of hoops that you really wanted that product.
Yeah, they did. If you think back in 1996, the internet was just, it was pretty new. I mean, it had been around for a few years, but the problem with the internet at that time that most of it was owned by the United States military, and commercial activity was really prohibited at that time. And I think it was in, I don't know, I'd have to go back and look at some of the stuff that I wrote, but I wrote a report about this at one time, that in April, I think it was like 1995 or 1996, ARPNET, which was owned by the government, which is a very early form of the Internet, a lot of that network was sold to MCI, and that opened the door for commercial enterprises on the Internet, and that's when the explosion really took place.
Right.
Yeah, just after that.
So at what point did you end up getting $60,000 in debt? How did you end up doing that?
Oh, my gosh, what a painful time in my life. It was just absolutely horrible. Well, I had saved up about, from my job, about $25,000. My wife and I had just purchased a new home that was bigger because we had four children at that. You know, we still have four children, but we decided that we wanted a bigger place to live. We needed more bedroom space and so forth. And I had saved up about $25,000. And I decided I was going to quit my job. I knew this Internet thing would work. It was just a matter of time. I didn't realize how long of a time period it would take to get going. But I ran through that $25,000 pretty quick. I ran through another almost $60,000 in credit cards to, you know, pay for living expenses during the first 2.5 years I was online. And it just kind of evolved into a very, very bad situation.
So how did you, I mean, that's a huge amount of debt, I think, for anybody. How did you end up getting back out?
Well, pure desperation. Determination that I was never going to get another job in my life. I hated working for other people. I liked serving people, and that's why I was in the nonprofits, I think, field for so long, because I liked to help other people. But I couldn't stand people looking over my shoulder. I mean, I knew what I was doing. You know, why are they looking over my shoulder, you know?
Yep.
And my last job actually was for a mayor that was absolutely nuts.
He
constantly asked me if I was on the take, you know, like, you know, he was an older gentleman, and he had a few screws loose, I think. And he ended up leaving without fulfilling his term as mayor. He's a multimillionaire who had one successful business and about 10 unsuccessful businesses.
Ooh, okay.
Decided he wanted to be mayor of the city of Utica. And it was really, I said, if this guy can be a millionaire, anybody can be a millionaire. It was one of the motivators I had in the back of my mind. But I had gotten into such debt that I was really, my back was against the wall. I mean, I was at the point where I was going to lose my house. I was getting collection calls on a daily basis. And it was really getting frightening. And I tried to keep a lot of it from my kids, and I tried to keep a lot of it from my wife. And finally I said, you know, that's it. I got to do something about this. And I just started focusing and concentrating on money-making activities. A lot of what I did prior to that was reading. I mean, I did a lot of reading. I bought e-books, and that's part of, I mean, I bought courses and e-books and seminars and all kinds of stuff, and I had a lot of knowledge, but I realized that I just wasn't applying it.
Uh-huh.
And when I made that turn, I said, you know what, I got to start applying what I've learned. And I think this is the key factor for just about anybody who's not making any kind of success online right now, is that they've got to start applying it. Not just reading about it, but applying the successes.
Right.
And so I had written a lot of things. I was a good product developer. I had written a couple of books. One of the first books I wrote as a digital product was on eBay, because I had done a lot of things on eBay, and that was pretty successful. But I still wasn't earning anywhere near what I needed to earn to make a living online. so I decided to really think about what kind of unique products and offerings that I could make, and I came up with a couple of things. Number one was the ability to private label my products, my information products that I had developed and articles that I've written. And I made an offer to my list for these private label rights which at that time you'd never heard of.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people were offering resale rights on things, but they really weren't opening up their, you know, their Word files and text files so that others could just simply copy and paste their work.
Okay. Can you explain that just in detail there? How does a private label work?
Well, a private label is something that I actually developed. I mean, I had seen it work in other industries. For example, there are private label manufacturers who will, I'll give you an example. There's a manufacturer of hot sauces, and what they will do is they will work with a company or an individual who wants to sell hot sauces, and you create the label for that, and they will put your label on their product like it was your own product.
Right.
Except they do the manufacturing of it. And then you take that out in the marketplace and sell it. So I simply applied that marketing technique to the information business and took the raw product that I had developed, which were articles and books that I had written, and said, you know, I made an offer to my list at that time. You know, I'm going to open up my files. Here's my Word file on this and my doc file on this, and here's some articles, and you can use those. You can put them together as an e-book if you want to. You can take all the e-books, all the articles that I've written, and create a single e-book out of it, title it yourself, put your own copyright on it. You can do anything that you want with these. And the offer was phenomenally successful. Within a 24-hour period, I had almost $5,000 in orders.
Wow. Now, how big was this list?
At that time, my list was only about 1,400 people.
So you made $5,000 from 1,400 people?
Yeah.
How much were these private resales selling for?
I was bold. I had never sold anything for more than $19.95, I think, up to that time, and maybe that's why I was only making $1,000 a month. Or less at that time, but I decided to charge $497 for these private label rights. And I sold 10 of them right off the bat. I mean, within the first, I think I made the offer like sometime in the afternoon, and by midnight that night I had $5,000 in orders. And the next day it just kept, you know, it just kept going. I think that month I made almost $10,000, which was my first, you know, successful month online just selling these private label rights.
So was that the real turnaround month for your business?
Absolutely. Yeah, I had gone from making less than $1,000 a month on average, you know, to making $10,000 in that 1 month, and it made a huge difference in my business. And I realized, you know, that I had been making a couple of mistakes. One was that I was not bold enough in asking for a price. You know, that I should have gotten for a lot of my work. And the second thing is that I really needed to be, you know, to open my files up and let other people use them in a way that they need to use them in order for them to be successful online.
Right.
So it was very helpful to other people, and I think that was the key reason it was successful, because people immediately saw the usefulness of that offer.
Exactly. Oh, that's beautiful. So you really took kind of a cross promotion of a product there or a service that was offline and moved it online in private labeling things.
Yeah, it's a popular marketing technique offline. Private labeling products by manufacturers has been going on for I don't know how many years, but many, many decades. And I simply applied that to the online marketplace. And it's been very successful for me.
And I think there must be some sort of secret that you have of building a very responsive list. You have, with 1,400 people, where did those 1,400 people come from?
Well, that was interesting because I really didn't have an organized list, and I didn't really produce a newsletter. And during that very same month, since I had done a lot of business on eBay, I was selling rare books nonfiction type books and other types of books, collectible books on eBay, mm-hmm. and some other items. I had developed, you know, a good number of customers from that. Well, I went into my PayPal account and got a list of all the transactions that I had, sold, and all kinds of books that I've sold over the past couple of years, and put them all into a text file, all the emails and the names and the product that they purchased into a text file, and I just emailed them that month, and I said, gee, you purchased so such and such from me in the past, and I'm starting this newsletter about little known ways to make money online. Would you like to be, on the list? And to my surprise, almost everybody said, yeah, I'll do it, and I said, if you don't want to do it, just send me an email and I'll take your name right off the list.
Yeah.
And I think out of the 1,500 or 1,700 people that I had contacted, only maybe 100 or 200 said no thanks. The rest of them stayed on, and that was the beginning of the building of my list that enabled me to make that subsequent offer for the private label rights that really launched my career online.
Fantastic. I want to refer you to a comment that you made one time. It was either in a conversation we've had or in one of the courses that I think that I've read, and you said that you envy people who are still in the situation that you were in 1999, where you're deep in debt and you're struggling to make ends meet. Can you explain what you meant?
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, it might sound a little strange to some people, but the idea is that, when my back was against the wall and when I owed that kind of money, I mean, you are just totally focused on everything and anything that you need to do in order to succeed. And during that time, I don't think I counted any of the money that was coming in. All I did was, have I got enough money to live? What can I use extra to pay off these bills? And month by month, I would go through all the bills and just start paying. I started paying off the smallest ones first. But I didn't even care how much the checks were for. I'd write $2,000, $3,000 here, $4,000 there. I didn't even care. But it so focused me on getting out of debt and just paying off these bills that I only concentrated on helping other people as much as I possibly could in bringing cash in to the business, which was my only focus at that time. And then about 6 to 8 months after I started doing that, I realized I didn't have any more checks to write. All my bills had been paid off.
So you pulled yourself out of $60,000 in debt in 8 months?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which at the time I thought was impossible. I honestly did. I thought that was an impossibility, and I decided I did not want to go bankrupt. I was going to pay off these bills no matter what, and that was the commitment that I had made. I had just had enough, and I said, "Look, these people help." I was talking about the credit card companies at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was borrowing their money to live on basically for 2 years. And I said, they gave me the money when I needed it. Now I'm going to pay them back. And
beautiful.
That was the commitment that I had just made. And I said, I'm going to pay them back. I don't care what. And I just went, I doggedly determined to pay them off. And that's what I did. I just kept plugging away at my business, focusing on the methods that were actually bringing in the cash for the business. I stayed away from those activities that, were not income generating.
Mm-hmm.
I was all of a sudden I was extremely focused with my time.
Uh-huh.
Previous to this, I think before this epiphany came that, I can actually make money by, opening up my computer really and using private label rights as a way to make money.
Uh-huh.
I was very loose with my time. I was thinking about different product development, different articles I could write. I was reading a lot, which was a poor use of my time because it's not an income-generating activity.
Exactly.
Now I do all my reading after I complete my income-generating tasks,
uh-huh.
And time management became absolutely critical for me. I knew that if I didn't manage my time, I always say somebody else will manage it for me.
Right.
And yeah. That's exactly what happens. You can't let somebody else manage your time. You got to manage it and do those income-producing activities every single day that will take you to your goal. And at that time, my goal was paying off those bills.
Right, yeah.
So to get back to your question, now that I don't have any more bills to pay, I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, there goes my motivation, you know. I mean, I don't have any more bills to pay. They're all gone. Now what do I do?
Yeah.
And so that's why I made that comment to you that I really envy those people that do have bills. But the important thing is to realize that debt is very, very bad for you.
Yeah.
You need to pay those off as soon as possible. And if you get, I mean, it was very scary. I mean, you know, I mean, the thought of losing my home absolutely terrified me.
Yeah.
And I had four children, and it terrified me to the point where I said, enough is enough. I got to make money, and I'm going to do it now.
Now, how did you deal with, I mean, that's, on the business side, you know, it sounds like focus and motivation, and that really is the key that pulled you through. How did you deal with the other side, kind of the personal side of the, I'm sure there must have been a lot of doubt and negative feelings and possibly comments from your family and friends as well.
Yeah, it was. It was a very difficult time. My wife is just an absolute angel. She's just absolutely fantastic. And I remember, she told me she was talking to her sister at one time about the problems that I was having, and her sister said, oh, it's only money. Just pay it off, forget about it. Yeah. She said, don't worry about it. It's only money. She was terrific during this whole thing, and you know, she never gave up faith in me, and she was just terrific. And she actually had some money stashed away herself. She had been saving money over the years. She's a terrific saver, mm-hmm. And she actually saved quite a bit of money that we used to pay off some of the debt, and the rest of it, I just, you know, took money out of the business to pay it off.
Fantastic. What about the doubt that I'm sure you felt yourself? Was there any point that you kind of thought, oh, maybe I should just go and get a job again?
No, I never doubted it. I never. At once I realized, especially that 1 month where everything turned around, I realized that I would never work for anybody again. Because there's just too much opportunity out there. People will, I mean, I mentioned this in my course, that somebody was selling deeds to land on Mars.
Yeah.
You know, the guy is making tons of money selling deeds. Come on. If you can sell deeds to land on Mars, okay, you can sell anything. Anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to cheat anybody. I'm not going to scam anybody. I'm going to run the most ethical, honest business in the world.
Yep.
And I will tell everybody the truth. But the one thing I will not do is go out and get a job again.
Yep.
I mean, you could send here's how truth in advertising and reason why copy actually works is because when you tell somebody the truth,
yep,
they will respond. They will say, "Hey, this guy, you know, this guy's I can, you know, you can tell when somebody's lying to you or not.
Yep.
You know, you can almost feel it, and you know, a lot of people will sense that even in your writing or when you're talking to them or whatever. But if you're honest with people. Even in a sales letter, you know, if you reveal a little bit of yourself, if you tell them the honest truth of why you're selling this particular thing,
uh-huh.
And, you know, you'll get orders. I mean, you will make money from it. I mean, not everything's going to be a home run. You know, there's going to, you know, you'll have, you know, products that are not going to, you know, be home runs. You're not going to make $10,000, $20,000 in a month from a single product. But, you know, you can, if you're debt-free, or even if you're in a little bit of debt, if you can make your living, you can easily make your living, you know, selling products over the internet or, you know, even offline. So it's not that tough. It's not that tough. The key thing is to take action and actually get your message out to enough people and ask them to order it. And if you do that, I guarantee you'll be a success.
And we're going to cover all of that.
Yeah. Good.
So what's your life like now? What motivates you? I mean, back then it was to pay off the bills, but once that's done, what's the next step?
Well, there was a period from, it was a period of about 2 or 3 months where I was just literally dumbfounded for motivation. You know, money wasn't a huge motivator anymore. You know, I had the systems that I had set up for my online business were running pretty automatically, and, you know, I was earning $15,000, $20,000 a month you know, on autopilot pretty much.
Right.
And at that point, I'm thinking, you know, where's my motivation now? You know, mm-hmm. what do I do to motivate myself? And the one thing that we talked about earlier was the fact that I had always worked for nonprofits and I always liked helping people. And that is that I kind of went back to that and said, you know, that's my motivation. I want to help as many people as I possibly can. I want them to know, you know, where I've been, and I want to help them to get to where they want to be. And that is now my primary motivation, just to help as many people as I possibly can become debt-free and to be independently free financially.
And how do you go about doing that?
I do it primarily through the newsletter that I write. My free online newsletter at infoproductlab.com is called Little Known Ways to Make Money Online.
Uh-huh.
And it not only provides, well, I think, a lot of motivation for people, but it gives them the tools and the resources that they need to, you know, to go out there and make their living online. I've written a course called You Can Make Your Living Online, and that's available too. And all the products and services that I've developed are primarily focused towards helping other people become independent, and not just independent financially and debt-free, but also in the whole idea of thinking what it means to be independent, to be really self-reliant, I think is critically important.
So what, and in that kind of train of thought, what's a typical day like for you?
Well, I'll wake up and get my kids and off to school. I will probably be up around 6:30 every morning. I'll come down to my office, which is in my home. It's not a separate building, but it's an area of the house that has its own door and entranceway and so forth. And I have a couple of computers that are networked, a couple of printers, and actually a weight room, which is right in my office where I exercise. And I'll do some exercises, check my email, and then I'll go back and get my kids off to school. And I'll come back and I'll focus on what I need to do to write in my newsletter very first thing in the morning, exactly what I'm going to share with my subscribers. And I will also think about content that I can put onto my private site, which is another way in which I try to help people become independent by running a private membership site. And get that out, and as soon as I do that, I take about an hour and a half to think of new projects that I could develop. And then I pretty much do anything I want.
So you get everything, all the work is done in the morning, and then the afternoon is kind of free for you then.
Yeah, you know, after, I really don't like to work past 12 o'clock. I am actually pretty lazy. I will check my email a couple times in the afternoon if I'm around. If not, I go see a movie. If the weather's good during the summer, I'll go play golf. I have a couple of friends that like to play golf, so we go out and play golf. One guy has had a number of restaurants which he sold, and he's trying to figure out what he's going to do next. And we go out and play golf once in a while. And then my kids get home about 2:30, and I spend a couple hours with them, helping them with their homework. And I actually do all the cooking in the house, so I cook for my wife and my children. And
sounds like a nice
spend the evening with the kids.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, it's nice.
So as far as, I mean, that's the time management side of it is fantastic. What about the cash flow side of it? How do you manage that?
Well, I just pretty much give all my money to my wife.
Well, that's easy.
I don't even think about the money anymore. I just give it to my wife. Seriously, there's money in the business that I just kind of keep in the business. There's some investments that I've made. But primarily, anything above and beyond our living expenses, you know, our property taxes that need to be paid, or phone or utility bills and so forth, my wife is extremely good at managing money.
Uh-huh.
In fact, she's absolutely fantastic at it. And she has done some amazing things with the cash that I've given her. And she's, like she says, she never lets it sleep. She always puts it to work.
Excellent.
And she's very good at the money management side of things, which I was not, as I can see now. I'm better, as she says, you're better at making money, honey. I'm better at managing it.
Yeah. That's a good match.
Yeah, actually it is. And that's the way we've kind of proceeded. So besides the normal living expenses, she is on the lookout for investment opportunities that we take advantage of. And I concentrate on marketing and bringing in the cash. And some months I don't even know how much I make, to be honest with you.
Well, that's a nice position to be in.
Yeah.
You make however much you make, that's fine.
Yeah. And I just asked her, I said, did we have a good month or a bad month? She goes, we had a good month. So I must be doing something right.
Good. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So what happens now when you're developing a product? You said you spend about an hour and a half thinking about product development. Do you get stuck in a procrastination mode, or is there just so many ideas that you don't know what to do with them all?
I have so many ideas of products. I have ideas written down on yellow sheets of paper scattered all over my office. I have files. I have swipe files. You know, what a swipe file
yep.
is, right?
Maybe you should explain a swipe file.
Yeah, for the audience, anytime you see a promotion of a product or copy, a sales letter that's well written, I will just take it. If I get it in the mail, I'll just put it in a file. And these are files that I keep that I can refer to when I'm looking for a promotion idea or a headline or something, and I'll just kind of take a look at it at the file for inspiration. And that's why they call it a swipe file, because you're just kind of grabbing things from other marketers that you could use in your own promotions. And so I've got a whole file cabinet full of that.
Uh-huh. Can you describe then what's the difference between using a swipe file and actually plagiarizing something?
Well, big difference. I mean, if you're plagiarizing something, you're just copying word for word what they have, what they're using in their promotions, and you don't want to do that.
Right.
That is definite no-no. But what you want to do is maybe take two or three different headlines that you've seen, you know, read them out loud, read them in your mind, think about them, and then, you know, kind of turn it into your own headline by not just changing the words, not even pulling out words and replacing them with your own, but actually going through the hard part, which is the thinking process, and you know, coming up with your own headline,
right,
and using that just for inspiration.
Okay. Now, you have tons and tons of ideas. How do you decide which one to follow first?
Well, I will actually try to measure the cost-benefit relationship. And the cost-benefit relationship is basically an opportunity cost assessment of how long is it going to take to develop the product. Is the product in demand? Is there any indication that the product could be in demand? If the product is finished, how much can I actually charge for it? I mean, what's the minimum? What's the maximum going to be? Can I increase the maximum amount I'm going to charge for a product by adding this bonus or that bonus or creating the bonuses that I need to include in the product? And then determining, most importantly, of course, whether or not there's a market for the product. And a lot of times I will do a test market or a test of the market to determine if there's any demand for this type of product. But the most important thing that I think about is the concept itself. I mean, is the concept right? Is the concept going to work? Let me give you an example. I've been thinking very one of my major projects that I'm working on right now is a product that will help local businesses who own brick-and-mortar shops, retail shops with a physical location, connect with their customers using the internet. And I'm trying to pull this all together, and I'm trying to think of the big concept. What's the big concept? Other people call it the USP, or the unique selling proposition. Mm-hmm. I like to think of it as the main concept. What is the big benefit that people who want to use my services are going to get out of it? And so I spend a tremendous amount of time thinking of the concept. And if the concept is right, it will. And if you've got the concept down, that will generally lead you to write the copy very, very easily for that product or service. And then I always write the sales letter first and then develop the actual product, if it's an information product, second.
Really? Why is that?
Well, one reason is because if I'm writing the sales letter first, I can put everything into that sales letter that I would want as the person who is reading it. You know, if I was reading this sales letter as a customer, and that's the way I like to write them. I like to write them as if I was a customer reading it as I was writing it. What would I have to include in that offer in order to make it so irresistible that the customer who's reading that letter would have to buy?
Right.
And then I can include all of those items in the letter as I'm writing them, and then it makes the product creation very easily. All I have to do is go through the letter and start creating all the things that I already told them they were going to get.
it's kind of a cart before the horse approach.
Kind
but
of,
it works.
Yeah.
No, that's great.
Kind of, but I'll tell you, I learned that from Ted Nicholas. Ted Nicholas did an interview with someone, I can't remember his name. He's in Arizona. Well, if I could remember his name, that'd be terrific. But he did an interview on a cassette tape, and he said that he always writes a sale. In fact, he even goes further. He doesn't even write the sales letter first. He writes the order card.
The order card?
Yeah, he writes order card, and then he goes to the sales letter and creates the perfect product. And then if he can't create that perfect product, he'll take little lines out here and there. But almost every single one of the sales letters will match the product perfectly, and then the product creation becomes a simple matter of creating the product that you put in your sales letter.
That's almost your sales letter then becomes a recipe for your product.
Absolutely.
Now,
yep.
That's the way that you've done things is an extremely scientific approach. Do you ever kind of rely on your gut feel?
Absolutely, because I read so much and I pay attention to discussions on forums and things like that. I get a sense of what people want, and sometimes, you know, somebody will say something on a forum that, you know, I'll think about overnight, and a lot of times I will go to bed thinking about a particular problem or a project that I'd like to develop, but I'm having a problem with getting the big concept out of it or, you know, figuring out how I'm going to promote it. And I'll keep that firmly in my mind as I go to sleep, and a lot of times I'll wake up in the middle of the night or even the next morning and have the answer automatically just sitting there right in my mind, and I write it down or get right on the computer and start working on it immediately.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I use a lot of gut feeling. I use a lot of intuition. I use a lot of, I don't know if I'd call it praying, but I kind of you've heard other people talk about a higher consciousness or universal consciousness, and I believe that is really true, because I've thought about things and I've put it out to this universal consciousness. I said, you know, help me with this, and a lot of times I get stuff back when I least expect it.
Yeah.
You know, usually when I'm taking a shower or out there mowing the lawn or something like that, it really works out very well.
Do you find it happens very instantly for you, or does it take some time sometimes?
It takes some time. Usually it's not instant at all, because when I'm sitting there thinking about it, I'm in the middle of a project and I'm working very hard on it, so I'm very right brain orientated, detailed orientated, project orientated, and very logically orientated. And I find that most of my answers will come after a time where I've relaxed, I'm doing something totally unrelated to the project.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's when most of the answers come for me anyway.
So does it just, if you're mowing the lawn, does it suddenly just hit you, oh, there's the answer, or is it something that's just like a little wee voice in your head and you've tuned yourself into listening to that?
Well, it's weird. I'll give you an example. I was driving with my wife this past weekend, and she wanted to go to this little shop, and I was driving down this driveway and going into the back parking lot, and all of a sudden it just hit me. I mean, it just kind of like, it felt like this, something was like coming up almost like, you know, from within me, and it was like all of a sudden it just shot right into my mind. I had no idea where it came from, but it was a perfect answer to a problem I've been trying to solve.
So it's not
a project,
it's
and all of a sudden, I mean, I wasn't thinking about it. I was just driving, and all of a sudden, it was just there. And I said, and I stopped the car, and I said, I got to write this down quick. Where's a pen? And
yeah.
My wife found a pen and a piece of paper, and I just wrote it down. But it was the perfect answer to what I was looking for.
That's really interesting, because that's what you're describing is it happens to so many successful people, and it always happens when you really focus, and then you relax your mind, and then suddenly, boom, the idea just comes into your mind, or the answer to your question comes into your mind.
Yeah, there's a real process there that I think it works universally for almost everybody, no doubt about it. There was a great book by Jack Webb, and I think you can find it on Amazon for anybody who's in the U.S. or the U.K. or someplace. And you can order from Amazon, right?
I think you can order from Amazon anywhere, because in Europe it's shipped from the U.K.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a little book on creativity by Jack Webb, and a lot of advertising agency people will recommend it and use it. And it's a really a four-step process that he uses to kind of force creativity. And I've refined it even further, but I think it's a great process that he explains there how creativity actually works. And
can we cover that now?
Well, just off the top of my head, basically what he does is he gets into an extreme learning environment. He will assemble just about everything, the process that he's described. You will process tons of information. You will get magazine articles on the subject, any type of problem that you need to solve. You will gather information from articles, books, online, anywhere that you can find it, and then you lock yourself in a room for like 24 hours and just absorb everything that you can possibly read. Once you've done that, you put everything away. You give it some thought for a few hours, but then you just put everything away and you don't even think about it for a period of 24 to 48 hours. You are so totally, I mean, you just completely put it out of your mind, and you give your mind a command that you know that the solution is within you. You just deliver it to me.
Right.
And when you give your mind that command, it starts working on a subconscious level. It now has all the information that it needs. I can't explain it. It's absolutely incredible. Usually within 24 to 48 hours, you'll have an answer. And it's the perfect solution that you would have never thought of if you were just using your logical mind.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's an amazing way the subconscious and the conscious mind actually work together, but we don't even know how it works.
Yeah, absolutely. And the neat thing about it is you don't even need faith. I mean, you don't need to believe that this will work or not. All you have to do is make it very, very clear and really command your subconscious mind to come up with an answer.
Right.
And it will. So you don't even need faith for it. It'll work anyway.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe that one.
It is cool.
So, I mean, you've got all these ideas and, ways of focusing and creative ways of coming up with the products and all that type of thing. How do you keep a focus on your main business while you're working on all the kind of unrelated opportunities that come along?
Yeah, that's a tough question, because there's so many opportunities that you could, develop. There's so many projects that you could get involved in. And one of the things that really kind of distracted me shortly after I started to be successful was that, my success started, other people would tell other people about my success, or if I had promoted a product through an affiliate program that they were running, people would say, oh, gee, wow, Dave promoted my product and we made 147 sales overnight,
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm starting to get all these offers from people who want me to promote their products.
Right.
And, you know, opportunities are coming out of the woodwork, and, you know, it's really nice to be recognized in that way. But on the other hand, it's dangerous because there are so many opportunities that you can promote. You really need to focus in on your core business. And for me, that's developing information products and selling either the resale rights or the private label rights to them. And so if you have, you know, if you have that core in your mind, then you use that to evaluate and use as a criteria for all the opportunities that you have available in front of you. And, you know, if you want your business to grow, you really need to concentrate on your core, you know, core business, you know, what it is that you've decided to do. Yesterday, or was it the day before, I think, in my newsletter, I wrote about this called the three info product sales models.
That was the day before.
Yeah, it was the day before. Yeah, that's right. Oh, you saw that. Okay. And, you know, the first model is basically just a straight sale. You develop a product, an information product usually, or a piece of software, and people buy it, they read it, and they use it, hopefully. The second model is, you've created the information, but now you can also sell the resale rights to it. And the offer there is you simply say, you know, here's a great product I developed. You don't really need to read it, but you can if you want to, but here are the resale rights so that people can go out and resell your product and they can keep 100% of the profits.
Right.
And the third strategy, and which a lot of people have had a lot of success with, is, and that is create the product and use an affiliate program to sell it so that now you have an army of people selling your product for you if it's really, really good, and you split the commission with them. So there's lots of ways that you can do that. The strategy that I've used over the years has basically been I'm creating the product, and I'm either going to sell the resale rights, the master resale rights, or the private label rights to it.
Uh-huh.
And that's my... that is my core business. That's how I make most of my money.
So what are the disadvantages to that?
Well, the disadvantages is that you lose a great deal of control. I mean, I think a lot of people would have a problem, and I know especially people who are creative, of creating a written work, let's say an e-book, or a series of articles, and then simply giving those rights up, all rights that you had to that, just giving them up to someone else, and then they can create whatever they want out of it, resell it, keep all the money, even create their own e-books out of the content that you've created. And for a lot of people, that is a very, very difficult psychological hurdle that they can't get over. I've given a lot of people just are, you know, they're saying, well, how can you do that? You know, how can you just, like, give away your content? You worked so hard to create this stuff, and now you're just giving it away. And I said, well, no, I'm not giving it away. I mean, there's really, you know, there's a relationship here. You give me your money, and then I'll give it away. You know, and I have determined that that's my real niche. My real niche is creating content that other people can use to benefit themselves. And that's part of my mission, I think, to help other people. A lot of the products I create end up helping other people more than they actually help me. But that's okay, because I still make a pretty good living doing what I'm doing.
And you're helping people. I mean, your goal is to help people. So, I mean, by helping people get what they want, they're giving you what you want anyway.
That's right. Absolutely right. If I give enough people what they want, they'll give me what I want. And you know, I think that's the way it is with most businesses if they're going to be successful. You know, you can't sell a product that nobody wants.
Yeah,
nobody wants it. They're not going to. I mean, there's no value there. There's no relationship that you can create when you create a product that nobody wants. And believe me, the marketplace will tell you pretty quickly, you know, if they want it or not, because nobody will order it.
True.
But when you create, actually, I think I talk about this in my course, that there was a report created by Forrester Research, and it was a very, very expensive report, if I remember. It was only 100 pages, but they were selling it for like $3,500.
Yeah.
And if you go to Forrester.com, you can actually get get a preview of the report, a table of contents, and some summaries of the reports that they create. And in the in this one summary that I got, it was on how product creators and content creators on the internet should not be locking up their content, but should be opening it up. Uh-huh. And that's where they're going to find the most profitable model. And I read that, and that was just about the time that I offered the private label rights to some of my products, and that really turned my business around. And I read that, and I said, yeah, you know, that is absolutely true. I got to start opening up my products and not locking them up. And that's what I did.
That's fantastic. Now, other than you've got kind of the really the focus and commitment that I think, by the sounds of it, that's really how you turned your business around, is very pretty much pinpoint targeting exactly what you want. Something else that you've also done, you know, that I've learned through your course, is that you leverage everything. Mm-hmm. You leverage your time, you leverage your money, everything you can leverage, you do. Can you give me some examples of how you've used leverage to increase your business faster than if you had not used leverage?
Well, yeah, I think there's a couple things that come to mind immediately. One is I've really leveraged my list. When I first started developing a list, you know, I was getting a lot of advice from other people through their e-zines and through discussion boards saying that, you know, you don't want to email your list more than, you know, once a week, preferably once every 2 weeks, maybe once a month at the most. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking at the time, I said, gee, you know, that doesn't seem like it very much. If I really want to help people, I should be in, you know, constant contact with them. Mm-hmm. But I think I mentioned this on a discussion board before I actually got into leveraging my email list. And they said, no, you'll get killed, man. People will unsubscribe. If you start emailing them every single day, people will unsubscribe from your list. They will, you know, they will flame you. They will, you know, say all kinds of bad things about you. And you don't want to do that. You just ruin your list. Well, I've been doing that now for over 2 years. And I've been emailing my list almost every single day. I don't do it every single day, but I do it 4 to 5 times a week. And when I first did it, I remember I had approximately 2,800 people on my list, and I decided I'm just going to send them a message every single day. Uh-huh. And I had about 200 people that immediately got off my list. They said, oh, gee, you know, this is 10, you know, 10 sales letters in a row. You know, I'm gone. Goodbye. Uh-huh. And I said, fine, you know, goodbye. Yeah. But what happened was that I would provide enough real, genuine content in between the letters that I was, you know, in which I was selling things, uh-huh, that people stayed on my list. And in addition, I got letters from people, emails from people saying, you know, even though I know you're trying to sell me stuff in your emails, they're so well written, I got to get it every single day. You know, I mean, your writing is so good that I need to read it every day, you know. So that was encouraging, and I kept doing it, and that has been one way that I've really leveraged my my email list, and it has just a tremendous boost to my income. It's amazing that people, you know, and I feel really blessed about the people that are on my list because they stayed with me for so many years, and, you know, I do send quite a few commercial emails to my list, but... Mm-hmm. I also send a lot of great content, and they stay with me for both, which is
so
great.
So what is that writing style then?
It's really starting out with some sort of story, you know, very easy, very, you know, I talk about my personal life sometimes, mm-hmm, but it's very easy going, very easy to read, you know, short sentences, very light and breezy. You might even, you know, call it that. But it's very personal email communication. I'm always thinking about the fact that I'm writing to a single person and not thousands, when, you know, as my list contains thousands of people now.
Right.
But I'm writing to just one person, and I'm trying to communicate to them something important. And what I do, even though I send commercial messages out quite a bit, I usually start out the first one or two paragraphs with an important piece of advice or information about how they can improve their business or make their life better or some self-improvement tip. And then I get right into a, you know, a pitch for a product or a service that I'm promoting at the time.
So does your tip relate to the product then?
Yes. Yes, okay. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, in most cases, I like what Jonathan Mizell said in his earlier work, and that is that, you know, your letter should be like a slippery slope. You know, you got to get the people, you got to get people hooked into what you're writing about very early in your email, and then, you know, make it so interesting that they can't refuse to read it, and then bring them all the way down to the point where they're ready to order, and they don't even, you know, they didn't even know an order form was coming.
Right, okay, yeah.
You know, so you make it extremely interesting, you pull them in just like an article would, and you know, the real secret and the real key to making email marketing work, I think, is the frequency at which you write your e-zine or your newsletter and send out offers, but it's also hitting people at the right time.
Uh-huh.
You really have to sit down and think about the people that you're emailing. You know, what are they doing? And what are they, you know, what are they thinking? And you know, what problems are they experiencing right at that moment that you're writing? And I try to picture, you know, one of my subscribers in my mind. And sometimes I have fun with it because, you know, like this guy sitting down at the computer, I can see him in my mind's eye, and you know, his kids are running around behind him, and he's trying to concentrate on reading something on a website, and his wife's calling him to put out the garbage, you know, and he's got his dogs barking outside the window, and he's telling his dog to be quiet, and he's got the kids running around, and he's telling them, you know, he needs to read this thing online, and his wife's calling him to put out the garbage. He's just trying to concentrate on, yeah, you know, what he's doing, but he can't. So he gets up out of his chair, he goes, puts out the garbage. I send him the email. He gets back and checks his email. As soon as he sits down, he sees this thing and it says, you know, are you too busy to make any money online? You know, is your wife, you know, bothering you about putting out the garbage, and your dog's barking, and your kids are bothering you, and you can't focus on what you need to focus on in order to make money online? Well, I got great news for you. You know, and then yeah, I get right into my pitch, and they, I mean, it hits them right exactly where they are. You know, it kind of melds in with what they're already thinking.
Beautiful.
And you know, I you know, people have all kinds of problems, and I try to focus in on those problems and how I can solve them. Basically.
So you really use a slice of life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that's super. Well, that's basically the first segment, David, as far as looking at the personal aspect of, yeah, kind of your life and how you got to where you're going to be. Before I actually kind of sat down to come up with some ideas of what to ask you, I went to my list and I let them know that I was going to be talking to you, and I asked them if they had any questions for you.
Oh,
and
cool.
So in total, I probably have about 10 pages of questions for you that I've tried to list with the categories of information that we're going to be talking about. And so this one, I've got three questions for you. I like to call this questions from the crowd. We've got the first question from Jeff McCann from Boise, Idaho. And he says, how do you manage the massive amount of email that you receive?
Yeah, boy, that is a problem, isn't it? I'll tell you how I do it. I will. I don't use Outlook anymore. I use a program called Thunderbird, which is the email client that Mozilla is distributing with their browser. And I have all these little boxes set up so that when an email comes in, it automatically goes into the right box. And I can read down the actual folders that I use. One is called Inbox, Drafts, and Templates, and those are ones that are set up by Thunderbird itself. But then I have separate folders. For example, I did a email promotion for a company called bookscanning.com that scans public domain works into digital format.
Right.
And so I've got a folder set up for referrals for that company.
Uh-huh.
Entrepreneur Hot Sheet, which is a email newsletter summary of discussion board topics put out by SoapHub.com is another folder that I have. All of the e-zines that I've written is in a folder called e-zine archives. Then I have a folder called good info, and as I scan my book, as I scan my inbox, I will pull out e-zines that I respect and people that I read, and I put them into that folder. Uh-huh. I have another one called legal, know what that one is. That's in case anyone has a question about rights that they have, if they have resale rights to my products, as I do a lot of sales of resale rights and so forth. And I put any questions that people have in my responses into that folder. Then I have a folder called My Subscriptions, which are subscriptions to other people's websites, membership websites, passwords, usernames, that sort of thing. And then I have a folder for notifications, which are all my sales notifications that come in through PayPal. And those go into that folder. And then I have one called personal, which are people that I deal with either professionally or personally, like family members and so forth. And in fact, your name and email is in there.
Ooh,
so in case I need to contact anyone quickly, I can just look in that folder and say, oh, there's Terry's email address. Okay, all I got to do is email him right there.
Excellent.
Then I have another folder called Purchases, which is a folder for any purchases that I make online. And when I get the invoice or the receipt, I just put it right in there. And then I have one called Storage. And this one is interesting because anything in my inbox that doesn't personally relate to me or my business or questions from customers or something like that, I will just simply empty my inbox right into my storage folder. And if there was anything that was really important in there that I couldn't tell from the subject line, then I will just, go in there, and if somebody emails, say, how come you didn't respond to my email?
Yeah.
Well, I'll look in my storage folder, and I say, oh, there it is. Sorry I didn't get back to you in time, but, I get 300-400 emails a day, and this is kind of critical because, I will look first at the subject line of the emails that I receive in my inbox.
Uh-huh.
And if it looks, commercial, or it's not a notification or it doesn't fit into one of those other folders, then I'll pretty much ignore it until, somebody emails me a second time and says, I asked you a question, could you please, let me know what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I have my last folder is called Testimonials, and those are people who have written to me saying they love my products, and they think I'm the greatest person on earth. Those I want to save. So I recommended that folder.
Those ones you could read every morning.
Yes. Because you get enough of those emails saying, what are you, an idiot?
Yeah.
Are you a jerk? So I like those emails, and I keep them. And usually I email the person and say, gee, that's great. I really appreciate you saying that, and it's really nice of you, And I always respond to those because I think people, if they took time enough to say what a nice person you are and how much they liked your products or how much they, helped improve their life in some way, that they deserve a personal response. So I always do that.
Oh, that's great.
That's how I handle my email. And right now I have about 67 emails in my inbox, and they're ready to go into storage any second.
Wow. And that's from the last half hour.
Yeah.
Second question I have for you is from Susan Murray from Ontario, Canada, and she wants to know how you decide what to buy for your business.
Really good question, there's only a couple different things that I will purchase for my business, and that's information products that other people have written. And the way I determine what information products I buy is whether or not I can tell from the sales letter and my communication with the author that they were really written in the trenches. I mean, somebody who actually who wrote the report actually did what they said they wrote in the report.
Yep.
That is absolutely critical for me now, because I will not read theory, I won't read supposition, I won't read anything that's written that it doesn't have a ring of truth to it. And that'll come through in the sales letter. I'm pretty good at picking that out now. And I want somebody who's actually done something or has a unique angle on something or has a unique market that they're being successful in, and they've written about it. As far as my business goes, I purchase almost all of my computer equipment online. My copy paper and other office supplies, I'll usually go to a Office Depot or a Staples locally and get any of the office supplies that I need. But that takes up that's a small amount of what I purchase. I spend, oh my gosh, I have to say I spent at least $15,000 a year last year just on information products.
Wow.
And other people's courses and products and things like that. I do a lot of reading, but like I said, I don't do it during the day anymore. I concentrate fully on my business at that time, but in the evening I'll do a lot of reading, and before I go to bed I'll do a lot of reading.
So you're still quite a student.
Oh, absolutely. All the time, because if you're not constantly... one of the things I think that makes me a good product developer and information marketer is the fact that I read a lot, and I'm curious about all kinds of things. You know, I'm always curious about things. And then I write about those, some of those things, and they generate ideas, and it's all good food for the brain. You know, I mean, you know, there's stuff that you take in when you read that sits in the back of your mind or in your subconscious, and when you need it, you know, maybe that's what goes to work for you. That you got that stuff back there that you can pull from.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. I've got the last person here from the questions from the crowd is John Tasman from St. Louis, Missouri, and he has two questions. Number one is, how many projects do you work on at the same time?
I will work on a maximum of 3 projects at a time. There's always one that's priority, and I'll give that, that'll be right at the top of the list, and I spend most of my time on one project for a period of X number of hours even, or X number of days, depending on how the project is going. If I've run into a roadblock with a project, it could be a number of hours after I've initiated it. And if I think it's so overwhelming or such an obstacle to being developed, then I'll drop it right away and go on to the next project. If a project continues to look like it's going to be a successful project and has good profit potential, then I could pursue it for weeks before it's rolled out and developed and so forth. And I always have at least 3 projects on a to-do list that I'm working on at one time. And if one doesn't turn out to be as profitable as I thought it would be, I'll just cross it off and go on to the next one. But I will prioritize them so that the top one always gets the most, most effort and so forth.
Excellent. Second question that John has is, what projects are you working on right now?
Well, one I mentioned, and that was a local idea, a local marketing idea for helping brick-and-mortar stores get using the Internet in a way to help their businesses so that they can be in constant contact with their customers, which I think a lot of bricks-and-mortar stores do not do.
Yeah.
You know, they don't capture their customer information at all. Let alone follow up with them.
Exactly.
So I'm working on that project, and that's my top priority right now. Okay. And the other two projects are information products, because I'm always developing information products regarding, especially in the public domain realm. I have about 5 books right now that I am still waiting for copyright clearance on from the U.S. Copyright Office. And
right.
As soon as I get that, I'm going to send them out to be digitized. Scanned into a Word file so that I can start selling those online.
Excellent. So these are physical books that you have?
Yes.
Okay.
And I do a lot of work with books, and because I was so interested in books when I was younger, and within the book business, I will go out and I know all the used bookstores in my area. And I'll go to them, once every couple months just to check in and see what they've got new and, see if there's other titles out there that they might have in stock that I can, republish.
Right.
And I'll just buy them off the shelf, or I'll look online and go to ABE Books or one of the other bookstores. Libris is another one, Libris.com.
Uh-huh.
And, take a look and see what they have online that they might fit into the public domain publishing projects that I'm working on.
Super. And we're going to be covering public domain a little bit later on as well.
Okay, good.
You've been listening to Terry Telford from TheBusinessProfessional.com, and we've been very fortunate to be talking to David Vallier from InfoProductLab.com. Thanks very much for your time.